First Up continues on this Tiger Tuesday morning. Tiger Woods with his first in-person press conference. I guess his first press conference since his accident in February. And man, is he looking deezed up. Tiger
Woods. Where are you
watching
it?
It's on the Golf Channel.
Oh, okay. I'm
gonna has put in some weight. The curls, the buys, the tries. The old Landsberg workout. Remember, Eric Himmelfarb told us that he used to go to the gym, see Landsberg roll in, biceps, triceps out.
Nice.
And I think Tiger Woods has employed a very similar workout regime. And, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. There was no loading on the lower body, I'm sure, considering the trauma that his leg suffered. So I guess Tiger's just been working on those arms. Yeah. And I don't know how that would affect your golf swing. I mean, for me, as someone with very, very large arms, does not really make much of a difference. But for Tiger, see how that plays out.
Well, he's doing the buy, try, and sayonara workout is basically what he was doing.
Sayonara what?
He was hightailing it out of the gym.
Oh, I see.
Go
okay.
in, buy, try, sayonara. See you later. Look, I mean, he's always been a physically fit athlete. I mean, Tiger basically changed the way golfers approach the game now. I mean, before, back in the day before he showed up, you know, you could be a little bit overweight, you could be out of shape, and now you're seeing guys come in like Koepka and Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. These guys are fit, man. These guys have taken the sport and the craft to another level. And, you know, am I surprised to see Tiger in this shape? No, not really, because just imagine the type of rehab he's had to go through right now just to get his leg back functioning again. Remember, he had back issues. He got his back fixed. People don't understand, in your body, everything connects to one another. So when your leg stops working, your back stops working, your shoulders stop working, because there's a symmetry there that connects, you know, certain things in the body. And you talk about nerve damage that he suffered in his leg, and even just to be walking on it right now, which is a miracle in itself. He's got to do core, he's got to do back, he's got to do stabilizing to help everything sort of, you know, manage itself. So I'm not surprised to see him in great shape. I mean, I'm surprised to see him talking, that's for sure, but I'm glad he is talking, because he teased the world last week, right, with his three-second video that he sent out.
Making progress.
And not only do people care about him, the human being, people care about him and his future in golf. And I can't hear anything that he's saying, but if it's anything that he already shared with us in the Golf Digest interview that he did yesterday, here's a guy who understands where he is with the injury that he suffered. He knows he's never going to be a full-time player on the PGA Tour again. He probably wants to play in spot tournaments here and there. His leg is nowhere near being close to 100%. He's not even 50% through his rehab right now. We're talking about an injury he suffered in February. So in an instant like this, I think what we all take away from this is the fact that he suffered a very serious injury, and we're all very grateful that he's in the position right now just to even walk and just to even be able to say he still has two legs.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, the thing about Tiger right now is he's just like basically saying, I don't know, we'll see how it all goes. And I think that's just a reality of what's going on with him and his rehab, because it's a very serious injury that he endured, and he's still working his way back from it. Yeah, he's hitting balls on the range, but there's a big difference between hitting balls on the range and playing 4 days of tournament golf. And I think that's something that's pretty obvious. And I think that's something that Tiger has acknowledged. And listen, we'll see. Maybe the rehab ramps up and he is ready to go to play at Torrey or even play at Augusta National in April. And I think that's what we're all hoping for, because the golf world's a lot more fun with Tiger Woods at the fore, even just participating. And it wasn't long ago. I think it was April of 2019 that he won the Masters. And it's November of 2021. So, yeah, you're talking about 2.5 years ago, but no, it's not that long ago. Not that long ago. Never rule anything out with that man.
I got to ask you this question, and I know our boss, Jeff McDonald, is listening, and he's been wearing his Tiger one-piece outfit since his video surfaced last week. You guys have a lot of optimism about Tiger and, you know, his return to golf and maybe even his return on the best stage in golf at the Masters. But where's your realistic approach right now with Tiger? Based on what you've seen, what you've heard come out in the last 24 to 48 hours about Tiger actually being ready to play not just in the Masters, but in the PGA Tour this upcoming season.
Well, I think that it's pretty clear that he doesn't know the answer to that right now. And listen, here's the reality with Tiger Woods. I mean, this guy has overcome so much in his career. He had back fusion surgery in late 2017 and came and won the Masters in 2019. So I wouldn't rule anything out with this guy. He has shown a penchant to overcome adversity at every single stop throughout his time. So many injuries. And he's endured so much when it comes to the physical nature of the sport and everything that he's put his body through. But, well, you know, let's be honest. I mean, I wouldn't count on it. I think he's going to play on the PGA Tour again for sure. What type of success he will have, I think it remains to be seen. So we will track this Tiger Woods press conference for you. If there's anything pertinent and relevant, then we will let you know about that. But we had Buster Olney on a little bit earlier, Carl. He was fantastic. If you missed what Buster had to say about Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman, Semien, and all the big free agents around Major League Baseball, make sure to check out the podcast and subscribe while you're there. But the Robbie Ray Gausman situation from a Toronto perspective and how it all played out is one that a lot of people are still kind of confused by, you and I included. They signed for pretty similar type deals. The term is the same at 5 years. The money virtually the same, only $5 million dollars difference. So we
let's be
Buster,
honest, the Blue Jays weren't walking away from $5 million more that would have cost to sign Ray.
Exactly,
that's what it took.
So we asked Buster exactly what transpired, and here's what he had to say.
The numbers were, you know, from what I understand, the numbers were, you know, were comparable. They were in the same neighborhood. Obviously, they had the money to spend. We know that from the Gausman contract. They know him. I will tell you, you know, that generally speaking, while, you know, he had a fantastic year, there was some trepidation about Robbie because of his history of up and down and the fact that he had had some struggles in the past. And the name you heard a lot was Patrick Corbin, you know, who was tremendous before he signed a free agent contract with the Washington Nationals. And he's been kind of a disaster since, you know, relying on that slider. I got to say, there just been so many players in play that I haven't gotten, you know, neck deep into the question of why Robbie, you know, chose the Mariners over the Blue Jays. You know, but I think in the end, you know, they wind up with a very comparable pitcher in Kevin Gausman.
There you go. That's how those around the industry are seeing the Ray and Gausman situation, and I think it's simply a matter of fact in that the Jays look at those guys as they're like, yeah, we like them both. I don't think you can go necessarily wrong with either one, and the Jays opted to get Gausman under contract, and they got him done first, and Robbie Ray signing the next day with Seattle. So we wish Robbie and his tight pants all the best as he heads to the Mariners, and I believe both Ray and Semien will make their returns to the Rogers Center in the first month of the season. So
wow,
could be some nice standing ovations for those two gentlemen when they return, make their triumphant returns to the Rogers Center.
Did you see how I snuck in a little interest?
I did. I respect because the interestings.
I mean, I was surprised to hear Buster say that there was trepidation around Robbie Ray, which is something nobody has said about Robbie Ray since he became a free agent. And, you know, the first time you hear that, considering a guy that won the Cy Young, you knew he was going to get a good contract. But trepidation, wow. Maybe the Blue Jays did make the right move here. And look, right or wrong, you shouldn't sit there and evaluate whether it was the right move or the wrong move. The fact that the Blue Jays were actually, you know, involved in making a significant move like they did, adding one of those two guys. At least you didn't walk away with none of those guys. You walked away with one of them, and I think that's what you have to be happy about, Robbie Ray or not. You have to be happy that the Blue Jays took care of business. And the fact that you're still hearing the Blue Jays involved in some of these other players, that's exciting, because think about how far we've come as Blue Jays fans, where for years we weren't even talked about with, you know, big name free agents and big name or big time spending. like, you got to feel excited that as a Blue Jays fan that they're in the mix, they're willing to spend, they're willing to continue to put a winning team on the field. And that's the one thing you got to walk away from all this, is that, you know, there is that sort of hope, and, you know, that excitement around this team that is, you know, being installed into the fan base as well, too.
On the subject of winners, congratulations to at Chow About It for scoring tickets to the Raps and the Kings on Monday, December 13th. Plus, they win a $100 vanilla Visa prepaid card from Petro-Canada for the ultimate game night. Follow at TSN1050 on IG all season long for your chance to win free Raptors and Leafs tickets, including a game like tonight, where the Memphis Grizzlies in town to take on the Toronto Raptors. We'll be welcoming in James Herbert from CBS Sports to discuss that next, plus a big tilt between the Suns and the Warriors, the two best teams in the NBA. That's coming up next on First Up. First Up continues here on TSN 1050. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. Tiger Woods speaking at a press conference at the Hero World Challenge as the host this morning. Man, harrowing stuff coming from Tiger. Quote, "I don't see that type of trend going forward for me," with regards to a comparison to his last comeback, which culminated with the Masters win in 2019. "I won't have the opportunity to practice. It's going to have to be a different way of doing things, and that's okay. I'm at peace with that. I've made the climb enough times." Whew. Man, that's unfortunate. It's a little bit of a different perspective from Tiger Woods than what we've seen in the past, but yes, considering everything that he's endured physically over the last year, makes a lot of sense. On the subject of injuries, the Toronto Raptors dealing with a number of their own heading into their game tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies. And we welcome in from CBS Sports, James Herbert. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. I know our producer, Arad, was telling us you're a Toronto guy initially, and so certainly you have a unique perspective as a former Torontonian into the Toronto Raptors and everything that they've had to deal with this season. Now, 9-12. Now, there's been a lot of ups and downs throughout the season, a lot of ebbs and flows, and I think a lot of that can be attributed to injury, right? I mean, now OG Anunoby's banged up with a hip, and Kem Birch is injured, and Gary Trent has a calf problem that may keep him out. But from what you've seen from the Raptors when they've been fully formed and fully healthy, do you consider this team as one that you've been impressed with, or maybe not as much as you expect at the beginning of the season?
I think I was really impressed with them early on in the year. I thought they were like the hardest playing team in the NBA. I think they took a lot of teams by surprise with just how aggressively they crashed the offensive glass. They're still the best offensive rebounding team in the league, and their defense was just sort of causing chaos early on. And they started really strong on that end. And you combine that with the fact that I think right from the jump, they were better than a lot of people thought they would be offensively. Scottie Barnes was more advanced than people thought he would be as a rookie. And I thought they were one of the best stories in the NBA after a couple of weeks. Now, the defense has completely fallen off since then. The scheme hasn't really changed, but as you alluded to, like that, the personnel has a little bit, and they've been, you know, trying to figure out, I think, how like they want to manage this rotation. I've liked what I've seen from Pascal Siakam offensively. I think he's coming around defensively, but the lineups have not been particularly, you know, solid on that end since he came back. And that's the thing that is sort of surprising to me, is I kind of thought this would, if anything, be an elite defensive team this year. And the fact that, you know, they've been a little bit disorganized on that end, the fact that they've given up just so many open threes so far this year, that has been the part that has kind of taken me by surprise. But I think at their best, if they can get everybody back and establish some sort of continuity, especially with that small lineup they were trying to start right when Pascal Siakam came back, then, I mean, we can get back in the conversation about whether this team can make the playoffs and the play-in and how this all can work. But I think it really has to start with this team getting stops and then getting out there in transition, because I think if they're going to be the best team it can be, it's probably not going to be because of their half-court offense or anything like that. Even though, like, you can point to a guy like Fred VanVleet and some of the progress that he's made as a creator and then find positives in what we've seen from the half-court offense so far.
James, the Scotty Barnes progression throughout the season has been really impressive. I think he's exceeded basically everybody's expectations coming out of Florida State so far. And perhaps the most intriguing recent development has been the advent of his three-point shot. 9 three-point attempts in the most recent game against the Boston Celtics. He made 4 of them. If he adds this to his arsenal, what type of step forward could he take in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see if he can make them consistently, but I think the bigger picture as far as his development curve goes, that's incredibly important. I liked in the Boston game that he was hunting those threes. It's not always, oh, I'm going to take them because that is, you know, I'm being dared to. But he's stepping into those shots confidently. It seems like, at least in that game, that he wanted to take those threes. There's one pull-up three in particular that I remember when I was kind of like, took a little step back in my seat, like, all right, Scotty, sure. That was not the scouting report on him coming in. But I think from day one with the Raptors, honestly, you have seen him being an aggressive scorer, whether you're talking about attacking the basket or whether you're talking about him having a little bit more of an attacking mindset as far as his jump shot goes. I think early on we saw that more with his mid-range game. And that was a lot of like sort of the initial impressions as well. This guy's a little bit more polished as an offensive player than some people described him as coming out of college. And oh, he has like a little bit of a nicer touch than some people were anticipating. But if he can get that three-point shot consistently falling, whether it's this year or whether it's over the course of the next few years, then of course that opens up everything else with his game, because I think, you know, you knew coming in he had this really good vision. He was a good playmaker. He thought of himself as a point guard, and he's like a big-time threat in transition. But if we are discovering that this guy can make plays in the in-between game, that he can bully guys and kind of push guys around and get to the basket like we've seen so much this year, then if you add the three-point shot to that equation, then like you have a pretty complete package offensively. And like if the Raptors are kind of betting on him becoming a star type player and one of the building blocks of their franchise, I think, yeah, of course, a three-point shot is extremely important, and they've prided themselves on the ability to develop their players, and specifically to develop shooters with guys that they've drafted that have not come into the league with a reputation of being consistent three-point shooters.
James, to stay with the Raptors theme here, you know, clearly they've had a lot of adversity to deal with here, and I think a guy that has managed it really well has been Nick Nurse. And even with just a guy like Scotty, where, you know, all the success and all the limelight he's received early on in the season, you know, there was a time in last game, early on in last game, where he decided to sit down Scotty Barnes because he wasn't happy with some of the details and mistakes that he was making in his game. And obviously that, you know, helped trigger his second half performance. And I guess my question to you is, you know, as a guy that views the Raptors from the outside looking in, and we watch them every game, where would you rank Nick Nurse as, you know, in the coaching ranks right now? Because he's a guy that's really innovative, really creative when it comes to his schemes. You know, you're hearing players like Dylan Brooks call him a coach guru. You know, he's a guy that comes up with the janky defense to defend Steph Curry in the championship run. How do you view a guy like Nick Nurse and what he's been able to do in the coaching ranks, and where would you rank him?
I think he's an elite coach. I mean, he won a championship in his first year. I think that put him, you know, in a little bit of a different category than most guys that at that time didn't have, you know, a ton of NBA head coaching experience. But I think not only did he earn his respect from that, I think he has been influential. I mean, you mentioned the janky defense is like, the Golden State Warriors, who were the victims of the box and one and the triangle and two in those finals, now we're routinely using those defenses against other teams. And then you've kind of seen that spread a little bit throughout the NBA. I think you've also seen, you know, when the Raptors were playing a much more aggressive perimeter defense, a lot of times in a little bit that season when they won the title, but more so, I think, the season afterward, when they started really mixing things up, that they were kind of an outlier. And I think you just see a lot more teams now playing that kind of more aggressive perimeter defense. You're seeing less of the drop stuff. Teams still do that. The Raptors still, they have the ability to mix that in when they want to, although the personnel isn't great for that this year. But I think just in terms of, I remember when Nick came in and he was immediately talking about how he believes everything on the basketball court should be done with aggression, and whether that meant playing faster as a team getting out in transition, or whether that meant trying to force as many turnovers as possible defensively, instead of playing a more conservative style. Like that has been sort of the hallmark of the Nick Nurse Raptors, and I think that mentality has become a lot more prevalent around the NBA in the years since then. And so it's not just the kind of, throwing out unconventional defenses, seeing more teams use zone, which, yes, that has happened, and I think the Raptors influenced them that way. But I think his sort of principles, I'm just hearing them echoed more and more around the league. And I think, there's some stuff for him, the coaching staff, to prove this year, I think, specifically in terms of that defense, because I can talk about how good that all sounds, and we're still talking about a defense that has been drastically underperforming over the last few weeks. So we'll see if they can end up being that really good story that they seemed like they were in the first couple weeks of the season once we get to the end of this thing. The track record over the past few years, some of the stuff that Nick Nurse has shown in the playoffs, I think he's absolutely, like, among his peers, among NBA observers, he is seen as a top level, maybe a top five coach in the NBA.
James Herbert is our guest. He covers the NBA for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at @OutsideTheNBA. Well, inside the NBA tonight, the Warriors play the Suns. It's the first matchup in NBA history in which both teams enter with a win percentage of at least 850 and each on a 7-game or more win streak. I mean, this is a battle of two juggernauts right now. Golden State's been incredible. Steph Curry has been the MVP so far this year. And the Suns started off 1-3, and they've won 16 straight games, James. What are you looking for from this one tonight?
I'm just kind of looking forward to watching what seems like maybe it's a potential Western Conference Finals preview. Like, whatever you want to call it, I'm just kind of psyched. I got the chance to see the Suns the other day in Brooklyn, and they took their foot off the gas a little bit in the fourth quarter, and I think the score made it look like a closer game than it really was for most of it. But, like, the way they came out in that game against, a team that has championship aspirations itself, even though the Nets are not really fully healthy or playing quite like championship caliber basketball right now. I just thought it was so professional. It was it was such a disciplined effort. And I think the way that the Suns play, if you just watch them on a night-to-night basis, even against kind of more middling teams, they approach it as like, we are just going to surgically pick you apart. If you stop our first action, we are going to smoothly move the ball to the second side, and we're going to make you defend us longer, and we're going to get a good look. And they get a good look virtually every time down. I think they have changed a couple of things from last year. They play a little bit faster. They started doing that a little bit in the playoffs last year with Chris Paul throwing the ball ahead. But this year they've taken that to a little bit of another level, but most of it is the same. Like they have a ton of continuity from last season with just a couple of bench pieces they've swapped out. Their defense remains elite as well. And I think, you know the story with the Warriors. I mean, they're playing the same style they played basically forever, except they're taking more threes now. Like Steph Curry, the best three-point shooter in NBA history, is a pretty good idea to have him launch more threes. And their defense is absolutely incredible. I mean, I would say Steph Curry has been the best offensive player in the league, and Draymond Green has been the best defensive player in the league. And then, oh, by the way, their second unit and their role players have just been playing an extremely high level all year. And that's what really has been the difference between the beginning of last season and now. I think they kind of picked up where they left off in the last 20 games of last year. They did it with a little bit better talent around their main guys. So now we see Klay Thompson as practicing in the G League, and I think everybody around the team is just kind of imagining what it will look like once they add Clay to, and, you know, an absolutely incredible mix that they have going right now. So I can't wait to see this matchup.
James, I was really looking forward to watching the Miami Heat and Denver Nuggets game last night because it was the rematch of the Jokic body check on Markieff Morris and what was going to come of it. But I was amazed to see that the spotlight or the highlight of the game was the attendance of the Jokic brothers, like sitting behind the bench as like bodyguards for Nikola Jokic to that make sure that, you know, nothing got out of hand and fans were booing him and stuff like that. How funny was it to watch that, you know, a game between those two good teams, that it was the Jokic brothers that got all the attention?
I mean, I think it's hard not to put the attention on them. Have you seen those guys? They're enormous.
I'm not messing with those guys.
No, absolutely not. I mean, that is, I think they're playing it up a little bit. They created that Twitter account they had active for maybe like a day. And the fact, like, I mean, I just thought it was a joke when I first saw it. Then I turned around, oh, no, that's actually the Jokic brothers. Like, I believe Mike Singer from the Denver Post reported that, you know, generic no profile photo Twitter account from Jokic brothers was actually them. And, you know, they're going to show up and they're going to look menacing. And I don't know. I don't take it that seriously, but I think it is pretty funny. And it's weird because, like, the initial, like, story that kind of spawned this was a sort of scary incident in a game. Markieff Morris is still out and not playing because of it. But, I mean, I think we can still enjoy the Jokic family experience. I mean, there have been some good stories written about those guys over the years.
No doubt about that. James, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. That is James Herbert from CBS Sports, covers the NBA. Have the Koliakovo brothers ever engaged in a brawl together?
No, never, man.
Yeah,
we're
you
lovers,
guys
not
have.
Fighters.
Come on.
No, man.
There's
we're
never
lovers.
Been an instance in which the Koliakovos, the Koliakovo bros, I guess you could call them, ever, you know, got into a little tussle?
Actually, the only time I can ever think of us maybe even entertaining into a good fight, we were young kids, and we were riding, me and a couple of my buddies were riding our bikes to this park that had moguls, like the dirt moguls where you can jump off of them and stuff. And there was this group of kids that decided to jump us and try to steal our bikes.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was the only time I can ever remember even us trying to think about, but we were outnumbered. So it's like, here, you want the bike? Take the bike. Go ahead. Like, I'm not fighting you for it. And, yeah, that's about it. But that's crazy, man. It was so funny watching those Jokic brothers strut into the Miami arena yesterday.
So funny. They loved it. Those guys are scary. I wouldn't want to mix it up with the Jokic bros. I wouldn't want to mix it up with the – I don't want to mix it up with anyone. What am I
going to do? No, kidding.
Like,
exactly. We're lovers. But not to change subjects, but I think there's no other choice here because there's been a lot of Tiger quotes coming out of his interview that he just had. And one of them that I'm seeing is, I don't foresee this leg ever being what it used to be. The clock is ticking. I'm getting older. And then there was a question asked to Tiger this morning if there was ever the possibility of amputation for his injured leg. And he said it was on the table. Could you imagine having to make that decision?
Yikes. Yeah, that's a
so I think, I think we need to temper the expectations on what we expect from Tiger Woods and just be
only
grateful.
Five more majors, you're right.
Just be grateful that he's walking and has a, you know, two legs that you know, and he's still, the one that he's talking about is still not even close to being ready to be, you know, an athlete or at least active again. So
it's going to make the comeback and the climbing of Mount Everest is tied.
So these are seeds that he's planting.
Exactly.
Right, for the greatest
in his head, he's like,
ever.
Wow, I can't believe these guys are buying it. I'm definitely winning the Masters in April. This is hilarious. Sure. They're believing any of this that I'm saying. This is a lock. Probably win a couple majors. Maybe win the Open, PGA. So three majors, pretty good season for Tiger in 2022. I think that's what we're all counting on. Probably a little bit facetious on my end, but yeah, we will, I'm sure, be hearing from Tiger on the various radio programs we have here on TSN 1050. Maybe not on Leafs Lunch. Al's brother and Julia may want to stray from the Tiger talk, but certainly on Gameplay and on Overdrive. I'll be a focus for the duration of the afternoon. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakova with you. We wrap things up on First Up next.
You're just like my favorite song going round, round my head. Like my favorite song.
Wrapping things up for this Tuesday morning edition of First Up. Snow falling for like the 30th straight day here in Toronto. Okay, it's probably the third, but man, 3 days in a row of snow.
Love it.
It's 3 days too. Love it, thanks. 3 days too many, if you ask me. I got to go to a chiropractor appointment this morning, see my boy Dr. Ryan Albert, because my neck is not aligned properly. I got to have that figured out. And I got to trudge in the snow. I still don't have boots, man. I ordered boots 2 days ago. They've yet to arrive. And dude, I got to be rocking my sneakers, probably get my socks wet. It's going to be a disastrous morning.
Well, that, yeah, you definitely need boots, buddy. Timberlinks. Timberlands, not Timberlakes.
Yeah, Timberlands. Yeah, that's not what they're called.
Yes. Get yourself a nice set of Timberland boots, and I tell you what, you'll actually enjoy being out in the snow because these things are comfortable, and they actually are very fashionable, too. So
you are the king of fashion, and you will be that's away right, from the program for the next 2 days. We will miss you, Dave.
Maybe
Festra.
Hopefully three,
yeah.
We'll see.
Wow. I wonder what you're doing next.
Hold it. You guys got to hold the fort for me, man.
Are you going to allow us to reveal what's going on in the Koliakovo house?
Man, I'd prefer you didn't. I mean, it's my private life.
It's fine. All right. Got it. Yes. Got it. Dave Festchuk will be here from the Star. I'll do my best to avoid the conversation.
Let's just say I'm having a procedure done. We'll see how it goes.
Nothing serious. Don't worry. Carlo's health is fine, but
Yeah. Some
changes. Some changes.
I'm getting my eyebrows removed.
Yeah, I saw John Legend's wife. I forget what her name is. Chrissy? Chrissy Teigen had like eyebrow replacement surgery or something.
What?
Yeah, super.
Yeah, I'm
weird.
Not having that.
No,
I'm not having that.
No, you're not. All right, buddy. Well, we'll miss you. Best of luck, and I'm sure we'll talk in the coming days. And Dave Festchuk from the Star. You know he'll be oozing positivity when the Leafs and the Raptors love chatting with Fess. He is the man, and we will see you and speak with you tomorrow at 6 a.m. for 20 Fingers, a Rod, Cheese. Fantastic work this morning.
Keep it up,
Aaron
buddy.
Yes. And Coco for 3 days. We wrap with one word.
Ciao.
Happy Chinooka.